You want kicking things out of orbit?
Oh my gosh!
I'm gonna just knock it sideways.
One of the greatest fighters.
John Jones beat every champion. Pretty much
never lived. Khabib gets his hands on McGregor's gonna be that night.
Let's get into it.
Hello, you are listening to the Fight Night Picks Recap Show. I'm John Franklin. This week on the Fight Night Picks Recap Show, we discuss UFC 259, Blachowicz versus Adesanya. I will do all of this with one half, maybe more, of the Fight Night Picks Preview Show. I'm speaking, of course, of the great Matt Allen. Matt? How you doing?
Doing great. What a card last weekend. Finishes, yeah. Like amazing fights, like just a wicked card top to bottom. I'm excited to talk about it.
Me too. It delivered. Not everything delivered. So let's get into that. All right. Matt, Saturday night in the Apex. The card was loaded. And like I said, by and large, the night delivered. So let's get into it. All right. This is as big as it gets. Three titles on the line. Four champions involved as Israel Adesanya dared to be great. Foreshadowing, stepping up to fight for the light heavyweight belt. It was a loaded card, which gave us a lot of answers and a lot more questions. Let's begin the show with the end of the night, the main event. The 205-pound title was on the line as freshly minted champion Jan Blachowicz, coming off a second-round finish to Dominic Reyes, looked to defend the title against undefeated middleweight champion Israel Adesanya, who is a star of the highest order and, in fairness, has defeated middleweights who are a couple of slices of pie, Matt, away from making 205 themselves if they wanted to, and Yoel Romero and Paulo Costa. The former will be a 205-pound fighter in his new home of Bellator. So the question coming in, is Blachowicz a paper champ who just had a good night against Dominic Reyes, or is he the real deal? And for Adesanya, is all the no bulking up talk really legit? Well, on this night, Blachowicz answered his naysayers. He avoided Adesanya's lasers and dropped a couple bombs, found the ground attack en route to a unanimous decision, Matt. That's what I saw. What'd you see?
So now here's the thing. When Craig and I do these fight companions like we did on the pay-per-view, make sure you check out the next one we do. I'm sure we'll do one for Stipe Francis too, but we don't actually get to hear the commentary when we're doing the fight companions because we're the ones providing it. And everyone in their comment section was going off about how biased Joe Rogan was and how, oh my goodness, he thought Adesanya was running away with this fight. But Craig and I were very much saying like, no, Blachowicz 100% must have won at least one of the first three rounds. They're all very close. And round four and five were quite obviously Blachowicz's. So at the end of the fight, I thought it was really obvious. Jan Blachowicz either won 4-1 or 3-2. I thought Blachowicz looked great, though. I really did. And he didn't struggle with the air or in the areas that I thought he would struggle in. I thought he'd have a really hard time with the feints of Adesanya. And he does a little bit with the hands. You could tell Adesanya would throw up some of that weird wizardry and then he'd be able to catch Jan. But he was doing a lot with his legs, too. And Jan Blachowicz, to his credit, I don't think there was a leg kick that he did not check. And there's something that, you know, Michael Bisping talks about it. And we talk about it, how the UFC has really just become this kind of calf kicking epidemic. But Jan Blachowicz has people's kryptonite. He knows how to check that low calf kick. And for Adesanya, he could never really get his game going after that. And I don't know if that's more because of the wonkiness and the style of Jan Blachowicz, because Jan's not a guy who's going to go out there, work behind the jab, throw in a leg kick, and then maybe catch you with an overhand right. He leads with his power right hand, which is really unorthodox. And then he throws in that beautiful left kick to the body. And it's one thing to land that kick to the body against a guy like Dominic Reyes, who holds his hands very high. There's a lot of body to show. But to land those kicks to the body against a guy like Adesanya, yes, it didn't have the same impact against Israel. But still, the fact that Jan Blachowicz was able to land quite a bit of volume on the feet, I thought was really impressive. And the takedowns, you knew if he was going to have success, he'd probably have to get this fight to the ground. I'm just really impressed by what Jan Blachowicz was able to do. And I've been a fan of his. I try not to be a fan of a lot of guys, but you just kind of look at his story. He went from almost being cut. Now he's world champion. He's probably the happiest champion in the UFC, even though he carries around the most morbid little souvenir on his wrist. But I was just really impressed by Jan Blachowicz. And if I'm John Jones, wow, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I don't think I want to fight Jan Blachowicz.
You know, that's a very hot take. I'll say this. And we'll get into the who, which went which way with the decisions and who voted which way, media-wise and judges-wise. But, you know, a couple takeaways here that I had was I thought watching it, I thought Adesanya won the first just on activity. Second, third went to Blachowicz. Because then when the fourth rolled around, we're like midway through the fourth, I was like, well, you know, if Adesanya takes this one, then the fifth round gets real interesting. And obviously that's when Jan started, you know, going to the ground and all that. So the dissenters on MMA decisions were, interestingly enough, depending on what stage of the game it is. Kind of some friends of the show, Rob Tatum, this guy that writes for Sure Dog, not really keen on the name. Drake Riggs, Shaquille, and Matthew Wells all went for Adesanya 47-48. And then everybody else in the media went for Blachowicz. So I guess the question here was, is my questions for you when it comes to Adesanya are, one, even though I gave him the first, it did seem like he was starting slowly. It did seem like he's one of these guys, a little bit like Connor, maybe Chuck Liddell in his day, where they got the big punch and they spend the whole first couple of rounds trying to find that read. And then, you know, if they're not careful, they can find, with a guy who's got some activity, who does some things, can find themselves in a hole. Do you think that Adesanya had the right game plan for a guy like Blachowicz, thinking that he was just going to find the shot eventually?
It's kind of hard to say because this is my one key to the fight. If Blachowicz was going to win, and he did kind of do what I thought he could, if the power of Adesanya wasn't enough to hurt Blachowicz, he could just walk through a lot of those shots. And we did see that. Like, Adesanya landed a few really clean shots. He landed a right hand over the top. He landed one of those weird, like, hooking left shovel punches that he caught Whitaker and Paulo Costa with. The difference between Jan Blachowicz and those guys was he's kind of used to eating big guys' power, and he was able to eat those shots. And from that point on, I just think it was one of those cases, kind of like what we saw with Dustin Poirier against Conor McGregor, where it's, okay, I've eaten your best shot, now what do you have? And Jan Blachowicz knew, okay, he's coming with his straight right, he's coming with his left hook. At this point, unless he head kicks me, I'm probably not going to go down. And here's the other part of that. Adesanya, no matter what his game plan was going to be, he still had to defend those takedowns in the fourth and fifth round, and he wasn't able to do that. I don't think it's as much as, oh, was the game plan of Adesanya right? I just think Jan Blachowicz used all the experience that he's acquired throughout his life. The guy is 38 years old. You can't really teach that experience. And he just went out there and fought a really smart fight. And all those people who are like, oh, Jan Blachowicz, paper champ and all that, this really does solidify him as the 205-pound champ. I favor him over Glover Teixeira. I like him against Jon Jones to a certain degree. Like, I really do think Jan Blachowicz, if he does decide to fight into his 40s, he's going to be able to stay the champ for a little bit.
Well, a couple questions. Oh, there he is.
Let's start with some questions here. So the one question I have for you guys, and I got to introduce myself. We're this far into the show. Craig Allen, at Craig Allen FMP. I'm the reigning defending heavyweight of the Fight Night Picks predictions. And my question to you guys, what do you make of the fact that here recently over on the SiriusXM shows, Eugene Behrman going as far as saying Adesanya, if he won the fight against Jan Blachowicz, he was going to move up another weight class and fight for the heavyweight title. I mean, I think it's absolutely crazy, especially considering what we saw on Saturday, but that was their plan the whole time.
Well, I'll answer it this way. I think that Israel has the guts to stand with big guys. I think that he took the fact that he was in there with Yoel Romero, and he took the fact that he was in there with Paulo Costa, guys who frame-wise could be 205-pound fighters, could in theory be heavyweight fighters. He said, I have the guts to stand here with these guys. I'm quote-unquote willing to die in there with these guys. I'll take it as far as it'll go, which I believe. I believe all those things. I just don't think he has the technique if those fighters take him to the ground. And he doesn't have the size to compensate for the lack of technique. So what do you think, Matt?
Yeah, and that's exactly what he had said, too. He was like, oh, my legs were burned out in that fourth and fifth round. I get it, but the problem is you had a much bigger black belt in jiu-jitsu on top of you. I don't care how fresh your legs are. If Jan Blachowicz got that takedown in the first round, I envision him being able to stay on top of Adesanya for really the remainder of the round. And that's the thing for Blachowicz. We could kind of look at this the opposite way. What if Jan was much more wrestling heavy in the first round? What if he was able to take down Adesanya? They were probably just looking at five rounds of Jan Blachowicz, rinse and repeat, going for those takedowns, controlling him on top. And for Adesanya, it really comes down to this, and we kind of said this before the video started. There's a lot of middleweights right out there who are really confident right now because they saw what Jan Blachowicz was able to do. And yeah, Jan, he's not the fastest guy. He might be a little bit wonky, but he's a very good MMA fighter. And I think there's a lot of middleweights like Mervyn Vettori, like Robert Whittaker, who they might have lost to Adesanya before, but again, similar to Poirier McGregor, the shine's not there anymore. Like, this guy is beatable. He's not this unstoppable Super Saiyan ninja who's going to be able to knock everyone out on the feet. Like, Adesanya has holes in his games like anybody else does. And I do think people are starting to realize that.
Yeah, guys were definitely getting to the gym early, middleweights, the next day. They were back, you know, back on whatever regiment they were off, they were back on it. So I guess you kind of answered this. And, you know, Craig told me once his favorite saying is glow up. So I guess my question here is is it a glow up for Jan Blachowicz, or does Israel Adesanya's star get diminished? I mean, obviously, it seems like the answer is Adesanya, but I mean, do we give credit to Jan, or we take it away from Adesanya?
I kind of look at it this way. After this whole pandemic's done, whenever that might be, Jan Blachowicz might really have the opportunity to headline a fight card in Poland, maybe even in a soccer stadium. Like, that's the type of guy Jan Blachowicz might be able to become. Will he become a massive star in North America? Probably not. He's 38 years old. He's a happy guy, which doesn't normally translate into North American pay-per-view buys. People normally like it when you go out there and talk a lot of crap to your opponent. But Jan Blachowicz, the worst thing he says to his opponent is, "Hoo-hoo, I might knock you out." And that's it. So Jan Blachowicz, he might not ever translate to the North American audience, but I do think you put him in Poland, do like a Poland versus the world kind of a card, have Joanna on there, have just a bunch of Polish MMA fighters. You could still capitalize on the marketability, if you will, of Jan Blachowicz, but I do think it diminishes the star of Adesanya. I really do, because the reason that he was such a big star at 185 was the way he was able to take everybody out. No one was able to hit him, and he was able to knock pretty much everyone out. And the one fight that was close was arguably the greatest MMA fight of all time against Kelvin Gastelum. So everything Adesanya's done has been spectacular up until this point. Well, now he lost it wasn't a bad fight by any means, but he lost what I'd say is an average MMA fight against a champion above his weight class. Will he still be able to go down to 185 and knock out a bunch of guys? I'm sure he can, but I don't think there's that shine associated with Adesanya like there used to be.
You know, I'm of two minds of this, because on the one hand, I've seen someone get defeated and come back and be more popular after the defeat. You know, Conor McGregor lost to a journeyman and got choked out by him. This kid went the distance with the champ, a weight class up, a guy who knocked out the guy who we thought beat John Jones. So, I mean, for Adesanya to go the distance is pretty impressive. So I don't know how much he's going to lose here. He's going to lose something, obviously, because there's no longer an O on the right side of his record. There's a one, and there's things that come with that. But so let's end this segment like we end all the main card segments. Who's calling? Do you think the call for Blachowicz is going to be the coach, the matchmaker, or Dana?
I think this might be the first time Dana White's ever called Jan Blachowicz. he probably had to ask for his number or get it through his wife somehow. But Dana White's probably either trying to set up a rematch. He might be trying to get John Jones to come down to 205. Because for Jan, he is in a weird position right now. Yes, he's the best 205-pounder in the world, but he's not nearly the most famous light heavyweight. And you look at his skill set, he's a very, very good MMA fighter, but nothing he does really jumps out. And I always use Stipe as an example. I'm terrible at picking Stipe Miocic to win fights. Like, I realize he is the greatest heavyweight of all time, but you just look at what he does stylistically and nothing really wows you by any means. And Jan Blachowicz is kind of a victim of that. So I do think Dana White's probably on the phone with him. He's probably trying to say, okay, we're going to do the Glover fight. We do that one in the Apex. But if you do win that, we've got something big planned for you. For Adesanya, I'm sure Dana White's calling him, but I would not pick that phone up. If I'm Adesanya, keep the belt over your shoulder, go back to City Kickboxing, and just work on your grappling. I really do think for Adesanya, it's a case of, I bring this up a lot, and Craig's probably sick and tired of me saying it, but Alexander Gustafsson is the best example of how to improve your takedown defense really, really well. But you've only got that first barrier of protection where Gustafsson's got that first good move. He's got great initial takedown defense. But if you do get him to his back and he does kind of accept that position, then you are able to hold him down and really control him. So for Adesanya, listen, I'm not saying you have to go to the gym, get your black belt, and then come back to MMA, but at least develop those one or two kind of moves that you have to get back up to your feet. Because once Jan had him on the ground, he went from full guard to half guard to side control almost immediately. There wasn't a lot defensively there from Adesanya. So I do think Adesanya needs just 3 months. I'm not even saying a crazy amount of time. Just 3 months, get off Instagram, get off Twitter, really dedicate yourself to the grappling. And if he moves back down to 185, he should have a ton of success again.
Yeah, I'm going to get out of here on this, which is to bring Chael Sonnen into the conversation. First Chael reference of the recap show. He said something before the fight, which is, you know, and this is me paraphrasing him. Adesanya's kind of the glitch in the game, right? He was the guy that didn't really need to do everything the way you're supposed to do it to still be successful. You look at John Jones, he's done things differently, right? John Jones says, no, I'm not taking a heavyweight fight until I bulk up adequately. And then Adesanya said, nah. You know, I won't cut, but I'm just going to go in there as is. And what Chael said was, we're going to see who's right. The John Jones approach, the Israel Adesanya approach. The early returns are the John Jones approach might be right. We'll see when he goes and gets his shot, weight class. All right, Matt, I'm looking at Craig, talking to Matt. All right, Matt, let's move on to the co-main event. everyone keeps waiting for the thing that's going to stop Amanda Nunes from winning. Is it going to be a horrible matchup or out of cage distraction? Side note, Holly was both for former women's GOAT Ronda Rousey. But Nunes is not cut like Ronda. She had some early struggles, but seems to have her eye on the prize now. Matt, I don't like my intros to be longer than fights. And this one was quick, and it was very, very one-sided. We kind of knew that Megan Anderson wasn't on Amanda Nunes' level. I mean, you know, side note, who is? But I didn't know that I thought I was going to see this. What'd you see in this fight? There wasn't much to see, but what'd you see, and what's next for Amanda?
Amanda's just going to keep on beating people for paychecks. Let's be honest. There's no one out there who can beat her right now. And the weird thing about women's bantamweight is you have three elite fighters, and then you just have good fighters after that. You've got Jermaine Duranty, Holly Holm, and Amanda Nunes. And those three really are head and shoulders above the rest. And Amanda's that much better than those two. So to warrant a title shot, you either have to beat Holly Holm or you have to beat Jermaine Duranty. Well, no one in the bantamweight division is doing that right now. So I don't really know what is next for Nunes. She could just keep on taking one-offs at 145, I guess, but she's running out of competition there. And you just look at how good she is at this point in her career. If you're a primary striker, she can knock you out. If you're a primary grappler, she can choke you out. That's the type of MMA fighter that we're talking about right now. And she is starting to creep into that category of regardless of gender, Amanda Nunes might be the greatest fighter of all time. And I'm just talking about her skill set right now because is she good on the ground? Yeah, she's downright lethal. She could choke you out any way she wants to. Is she good at wrestling? She's amazing at it now. Does she get tired? Never. And is she a good striker? Well, she head kicked Holly Holm and basically dropped Megan Anderson before she choked her out. So there's no weaknesses in her game. Her level of competition from here on out isn't going to be very high. If I'm Amanda Nunes, I fight every other month and just keep on collecting paychecks because there's no one in the UFC right now who's even close to my level.
You know, I think it's interesting when we talk about Nunes because she's this fighter who has every accolade you could possibly have. And I understand the women's divisions aren't as deep. But if Kamaru Usman, at the beginning of his career, right, let's say 5 years ago, okay, Kamaru Usman beat George St. Pierre and then beat Anderson Silva, no one would question who the greatest male fighter of all time is. It would be Kamaru Usman. So I don't understand how you beat Ronda Rousey. You beat Miesha Tate. You beat Chris Cyborg. Like, you clean the deck. Like, everybody's been beaten that could stake any claim, and we're still having doubts and we're still having questions. For me, I mean, listen, I've been out here caping for Juliana Pena for a minute, and everybody says, you know, she can't handle the fight. She's not ready for it. They say a lot of things. Well, was Megan Anderson, like, was she really? Was Chris Seib? Is anybody ready for it? Like, just put somebody in there that might have something that can give Amanda some trouble. And let's let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I'd really like to see the fighter that's 2-2 in their last four fights get a shot at the belt against a GOAT. Like, listen, the fight for Megan Anderson didn't make sense. If you saw the walk-in of Megan Anderson where she was pale as a sheet and she's walking in and she doesn't look focused or psyched at all. And listen, you don't want to look into body language that much. There's plenty of armchair experts that do it in the comments section every week. But you look at that, and then you look at the performance. That fight never should have happened. The two wins coming into it, Zara Farron and Norma Dumont. We're talking UFC debuts. None of those wins made a lot of sense. But then you go down to bantamweight. I mean, who's next? Do you rematch Duranty? That's what I think they should do. Maybe Holly Holm because she has that big win over Irene Aldana. But you look at Juliana Pena. Does a win over Sarah McMahon, who was in her 40s, does that qualify as a big win? A loss to a striker by submission? You like that, John? Or a win over Nico Montano, the fighter that could never do it but kind of did it at flyweight. None of that makes any sense to me. Pena, maybe, because she's been kind of pining for it. She at least jawed on Twitter during that fight. She was the only person that did. But there's nobody. Duranty or Holm?
All right.
But here's the thing. She's already beat Jermaine Duranty twice. You can't make that trilogy. I've TKO'd you once, and the other time we fought, you didn't even win a minute if I'm Amanda Nunes. So, like, there's nothing left for her unless you want to see her destroy Aspen Ladd and Juliana Pena in the same night. Even that wouldn't be competitive. Like, I have no idea what you do with Nunes, but I am happy to just keep on watching her destroy people every other pay-per-view.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that, like, you got to give somebody a chance. All right, real quick, who's calling? The coach, the matchmaker, or Dana?
Probably Dana. Just he's like, hey, great job. don't really know what you want to do next. Henry Cejudo wanted to fight Valentina. Maybe he'll fight you. But I genuinely have no idea what you do with Nunes. Unless you try to get Clarissa Shields to come over, like, there's no one left for her to fight really in any other combat sport, much less MMA.
All right, let's move on to the third title shot, or title fight of the night. Coming into the titleweight, the bantamweight title fight between Petr Yan and Aljamain Sterling, we thought there was a chance the title could change hands. But not like this, Matt. An illegal, some might say intentional knee to a down Sterling took the belt off Yan's waist and put it around the Funkmasters. We'll get into the right and the wrong of that, including what many are calling Sterling's Oscar-worthy performance. Matt, let's start with the fight. What'd you see in this one?
I thought Petr Yan looked really good. I did. And Aljamain Sterling had the issue that Craig and I brought up. And it's not like we were the only ones talking about this, but Aljo throws too much volume. He's not a guy like Michael Bisping, who's great at just reserving his gas tank and knowing how hard he can push every single round. And you saw that. Aljamain Sterling throws everything at Petr Yan in that first round. He's throwing him a ton of volume. He's wrestling. He's just really trying to do as much as he can to get this fight to the ground and go for a submission. But Yan, sound defensively, he's really, really smart fighter. We talk about the fight IQ of Petr Yan all the time. It will withstand that. Go into the second round. Petr Yan starts to land a little bit more. He's defending all the takedowns. Go into the third round. Petr Yan's starting to take over. You can tell Sterling's getting tired. And the thing that I disliked about what Sterling did, and here's the thing, I don't think he was faking, and you can't fake getting hit by an illegal shot if you didn't get hit by the illegal shot in the first place. Like, Petr Yan, don't throw that knee. I don't care what your corner told you. If a guy's quite obviously on the ground, let's not go ahead and punt him Randy Orton a la 2011 style. But Aljamain Sterling, it's just unfortunate that that's how he won the title. Because if you're Petr Yan, you're still the best bantamweight in the world. I don't think there's any argument with that. We're just waiting on the rematch at this point, and hopefully Sterling can get cleared. But I thought Petr Yan was looking good. I thought he was well on his way to win a unanimous decision victory, if not get a stoppage at some point in the fifth round. Because as you could tell, the tide was starting to turn. And as good as Sterling looked at the start of that fight, Petr Yan is just kind of inevitable. He's like Thanos. He's going to come eventually. And you could tell when he lands power compared to when Aljamain Sterling landed power, it was night and day. Like, Petr Yan was making Aljo rock every single time he landed, whereas Aljo would throw a lot, but he wasn't really getting a reaction out of Yan. So it's unfortunate that that's how the fight ended. It's a weird way to have a second loss in your career, but I got to be honest, in the rematch, I fully expect Petr Yan to beat Aljamain Sterling at this point. I just think the style of Aljo is going to have a tough time with someone like Yan, because Yan is so good at making mid-fight adjustments, and Sterling kind of shows you everything in that first round. He's throwing a ton of volume. You know where all of his angles are coming from. So by the time the second round comes around, I've already seen you throw 110 punches. I kind of know where they're all coming from. As long as I stay sound defensively, I'll be able to take over this fight. So if Yan goes back to American Top Team, maybe goes back to Tiger Muay Thai for the next fight, but I really like Yan in the rematch of this one.
You know, one of the things that I've always said about fighters is that once a hole is exposed, it's very hard to close up, right? Because that hole has been in training. You've built that hole in the same way you've built your strengths, right? So if somebody can land a lead right hand, then they're going to lead it for, you know, gonna land it for most of the night. So when, like you said, Sterling sort of emptied out the toolbox and Yan had all the reads by early to mid second round, it was looking a little messy. Now when we get to, I want to react to Sterling post fight and talk about my true feelings here, right? Because in watching it, the first thing that I thought was, he's laying it on pretty thick here. Like, he really is. He's laying it on pretty thick. And I'm not saying that he's not in his right to do that, because at the end of the day, yes, you want to have some integrity in this contest, right? You want to be, you're in a contest here and you want to maintain some integrity. But with that being said, it's like, who's he recovering for? Petr Yan? Is he recovering for the benefit of the guy that just illegally need him? Like, what is the upside here? He's like, okay, let me muster everything I have to get back in this fight to be compromised for the guy who illegally need me. Like, what's the upside for Sterling to just show he's tough? I mean, yeah, he should be honest with how he's feeling, but how he's feeling is, I'm concussed based on a shot I should have never taken. So why should I continue? You know, so do you think the right call was made?
The right call was made. Again, you can't lose by disqualification if you didn't do something dirty in the first place. And let's just call it what it is. What Pyotr did was pretty dirty. Like, he landed a flush knee to a guy who was quite obviously down. And from where Pyotr was, you don't have a great argument of, oh, I couldn't see that his knee was down. His knee was quite obviously down. Now, I do understand his corner were the people who told him that he was allowed to throw that strike, but it's on the fighter. The ref goes out back to explain the unified rules of MMA to you before the fight for a reason. It's not so we have situations like this in title fights. And I, for Aljo, it's tough. Listen, I think that knee landed, and I think he was 100% rocked. The only thing that is a little odd, and I can't even really hate on him for it, is him saying, oh, maybe I'll fight Henry Cejudo next. Get that out of my face. That's kind of weak. I understand that you're just trying to get a reaction out of Pyotr Jan, but you kind of realize you don't deserve the title. I understand he's the champ right now. He's going to be the champ until their next fight. But for Sterling, I don't really know what he does going into their next fight. I don't, because that is his style. He needs a lot of volume early on in the fight. Because let's say Sterling goes out there and he doesn't try to throw a lot against Pyotr Jan. He is just kind of standing with a mirror in him. You throw a couple strikes, I throw a couple strikes. Pyotr Jan's going to TKO him in, what, the second round? I don't think either one of us would say that'd be a very competitive fight if both guys just stood there and kind of mirrored each other. So for Sterling, he needs that style that was losing him the fight to win the rematch. And I just don't think Pyotr Jan's not going to make the adjustments. He's able to make in-fight adjustments in between rounds and really during the round itself. So if he gets a full training camp knowing exactly what Aljamain Sterling's throwing at him, I just don't see how Pyotr Jan's not going to win this rematch.
Well, the trouble for Aljamain Sterling here is the old golden rule. And this is the golden rule. The guy who has the gold makes the rules. Now, that doesn't really pertain too much to the UFC, because Dana makes the rules. He'll take a belt off your ass so fast it'll make your head spin. But at the same time, he has much more leverage as the champion than he has not as the champion, which I think is why he was taking his photos and embracing it and all that. And listen, I want to talk about the rematch. We can kind of transition that into who's calling. I've seen some things out there that make me wonder what we should do in this respect. People are saying Pyotr Jan shouldn't get an automatic rematch because then you're rewarding the behavior. What do you think? Do you think the rematch is a foregone conclusion?
I think you still got to give him the rematch, because right now Sterling already has a win over Sandhagen. So it's kind of hard to justify a Sandhagen Sterling rematch. And Jan, if it would have been different if Sterling was winning the fight up until that point and then Jan landed the illegal strike, but Jan was ahead on the scorecards and it looked like the fight was going in his direction anyway. So I do think you have to give him a rematch. I understand it might be a bad look rewarding a guy for a foul like that, but listen, the UFC is putting TJ Dillashaw in a title eliminator coming off a USADA suspension. Like, the UFC doesn't really have much of a moral code when it comes to this stuff. So I fully expect them to give Pyotr Jan the immediate rematch.
All right, sounds good. Let's move on. Matt, we have lost this week who many thought was going to be the next Khabib Nurmagomedov, Khamzat Chimaev. We'll see how that turns out. But we got the return of who Khabib thinks is going to be the next Khabib Nurmagomedov, Islam Makhachev. And boy, did he fight like it. Drew Dober had little time on his feet and little breathing room as Makhachev controlled the level before closing the show in the third via arm triangle. What'd you see in this fight? And where do we go from here with this kid?
Okay, I was disgustingly confident about this pick. I really was, because I didn't see a way Drew Dober was going to be able to win this. Drew Dober, again, Craig and I bring it up a lot, got taken down by Alexander Hernandez after he was wobbled. So you're getting taken down by a guy who's rocked, and now you're telling me he's going to beat Islam Makhachev, one of the best grapplers in MMA, period, much less just in the weight class. And there was a lot of people out there saying, oh, Drew Dober could catch him. Like, if this is on the feet, Drew Dober could catch him. In what world was Drew Dober going to win this fight? Just stylistically, he's not a great grappler. He's not a great defensive grappler. He doesn't have the best takedown defense in the world. And you're fighting a guy who's going to expose all those holes in your game. Yeah, he might be a decent striker. Islam doesn't even play that game with you, though. It's not like he's going to go out there, throw a couple strikes, then go for the takedown. He knows what he's good at. And in MMA, that's a really important thing. Some guys don't know what they're good at. But for Makhachev, he realizes, I get these guys to the ground. There's not many people who can compete with me in the grappling realm. So it was a really nice win from Islam Makhachev, but I didn't learn anything more about him. I knew he could out-grapple Drew Dober on my way into this fight. I know he can grapple Drew Dober on my way out of it. So I like his call-out. I do like the Tony Ferguson call-out. There's that Khabib connection. It would be really cool because, look at it on the flip side. What if Tony goes out there, like, triangles Makhachev from his back, and then he's like, Khabib, you think this is 2.0? Like, I want you next. There's a bit of a storyline there. So I do think Makhachev had a great call out after the fight, but I didn't learn anything I didn't already know going into it.
Yeah, I agree. You know, listen, we talk all the time about how I'm half a casual. Here's my problem with a guy like Makhachev. He's Khabib 2.0 in the sense that he might be a fighter with that skill set that you just can't stop. But listen, if you don't put Conor McGregor into the equation, no one gives a shit about Khabib. I mean, champion or not. I mean, he got all his juice, everything that he has today in terms of a worldwide celebrity from the whole Conor throwing a dollar. All that is from Conor. And I don't see Makhachev being able to get near that. So I do like the Ferguson fight. I agree with you just in terms of raising his profile. But, I mean, is this going to be Khabib all over again when we have a champion that no one can beat and no one really cares to watch?
I don't think so. I think Islam's a much more beatable fighter than Khabib was. And because you look at what Khabib was able to do. Yeah, his striking wasn't as good as his grappling. But look at that Justin Gaethje fight. Like, Khabib's a really good striker. At least at the later half of his career, he turned into a very good striker. Whereas Makhachev, he will just panic wrestle a lot. And you are able to expose that a little bit on the feet if you are able to keep him at standing range. And you think of a guy like a Charles Oliveira. Yes, Makhachev outgrappled Drew Dober, but I've seen Charles Oliveira outgrapple a guy like Tony Ferguson, who is one of those top-tier grapplers. So I really do need to see Islam Makhachev fight an elite fighter first. He was supposed to fight RDA before he fell out, and then they replaced him with Paul Felder, of course. But I'd like to see maybe that matchup. Maybe you give him a Dan Hooker. I hate to do that to Dan Hooker, but I just need to see him fight someone in the top 15 at this point. And sometimes it's been his fault for why he hasn't been able to fight them. He's had a lot of fights where either he's fallen out or his opponent have, but we just need to see him be more active at this point because his skill set, it really is not that it's unbeatable. We have seen him beat, but when he gets going, especially once he gets his wrestling going, he's a very hard mystery to solve. So I think there's guys in the top 10 who can beat him, but until he does face that level of competition, he's going to be able to run over most guys in the UFC.
You know, another crazy thing about this fight was that he came in ranked 14th. Kid hasn't fought in like a year and a half. I mean, I know we don't take the rankings all that seriously, but God, let's pretend a little bit that in a, you know, a year and a half, you might lose your ranking. All right, Matt, you like basketball analogies. I like basketball analogies. The world loves basketball analogies. So here's one. They say one of the reasons why it's so hard to repeat as a champion in basketball, football, baseball is because you are the game everyone circles on their calendar. You are the measuring stick. Everyone gets up to face you. That is certainly what Thiago Santos did the night he fought John Jones. So much so that his body in many ways that night failed him. That's not taking anything away from John Jones. Since that night, it's been a submission loss to Glover Teixeira. And tonight, or on Saturday, a unanimous loss to Alexander Rakic. Tell me what you saw on this one. Also tell me, do you think we've seen the best of Thiago Santos? Do you think he has another run in him, another third wind, as it were?
Do I think it's over for the 37-year-old with no ACLs? Yeah, I think it's over for the 37-year-old with no ACLs. And here's the thing. You can't even really base that just off the performance against Rakic because that was an awful fight. I don't care what anyone says. That was not a good fight whatsoever. And I thought that was probably going to be your fight of the night between Rakic and Santos. You know, Rakic comes out a million miles an hour, a very aggressive fighter. And the same thing can be said for Santos. We didn't see any of that. Rakic won a couple more moments in the fight than Santos did. I definitely thought he did enough to win the fight. Don't get me wrong. But we didn't really see a lot from either guy. And for Santos, the thing that does worry me, we don't see nearly as many kicks as we used to. Not a great sign when you've had leg injuries. And he doesn't have the same ability to close distance that he used to. We saw against Rakic, he'll throw the overhand. He'll try to close distance with his power, but the feet aren't really there behind his hands. And that's going to be a problem against the Jiří Procházkas of the world. Yes, Santos might be able to beat some slower, flat-footed guys at 205. Ryan Spann's a name that comes to mind. Maybe a Paul Craig. Like, the fact that 205 is not the deepest division is going to help Thiago Santos. He'll be in the top 15 for a little while, but I think his days of being an elite contender are over because you look at his takedown defense. It was good in this fight. Don't get me wrong, but go to the Glover fight. Glover dominated Thiago on the ground, and that fight was not competitive whatsoever. And I do think if he did have a rematch with Jan Blachowicz, we've seen the improvements in Blachowicz's wrestling. I think Blachowicz could do the same thing. A guy like Prohasha, who is so good with the hands, he's going to be able to close distance on Santos and probably knock him out up close. So I think Santos is still a player at 205. I think he'll be able to get some good wins. And not just based off getting lucky, but with Santos, that will be the case. If he cracks you on the chin, you're going to go to sleep. So he may be able to beat fighters who are better than him. He's going to lose to fighters who are worse than him, but I look a little silly. I said Alexander Rakic was going to be your future champ, and I still do believe that to a certain degree, but the performance he put on against Santos definitely did not reinforce that in my mind whatsoever.
All right, let's move on to the prelims. First up, Dominic Cruz defeated Casey Kenney via split decision, 30-27, 29-28, 20-29. Tucson was definitely in the building. Michael Bell and, in the media, Shaquille Majuri were your only dissenters. What'd you see in this one?
I thought Dominic Cruz won this fight. I did. He looked really good in that first round, I thought, with his, you know, figure eight, Tipson and Turvin and whatnot. He looked good. The issue was for Dominic Cruz, and it's going to be an issue really for the rest of his career, is people know what he's doing. It's not like he's this weird riddle anymore. There's so much fight tape out there of Dominic Cruz. He hasn't been very active, and he beat Casey Kenney, who I think is a very good fighter, but I think that speaks to how good Dominic Cruz is. I don't think he's in his prime anymore, and I don't think he can compete with guys in the top five, but he's still good enough to beat guys outside the top 15, who I do consider at least dangerous, because Casey Kenney, he's a black belt on the ground. He's got great wrestling defense. He has okay wrestling defense, I should say. It was good in this fight, at least. And he's a very heavy-handed striker, but Dominic Cruz, he's still got good cardio. He can still mix things up, and I thought Cruz's striking looked good. He landed a lot of clean shots in this fight. I just worry about Cruz moving forward with the leg kicks, because if you're going to do all that movement, the kicks are going to be open no matter what. And you saw it in the fight against Henry Cejudo, not really a kicker. And even Casey Kenney, who does have good power leg kicks, he was starting to get to Cruz as that fight progressed. And let's just bring up another name at 135 who I compare Casey Kenney to a lot. Pedro Munhoz does everything Casey Kenney does. He's just a little bit better at it. Can he box on the inside? Yeah, he's got a lot of power. Can he kick your legs? He can, and he's got a ton of power behind it. And do you want to take him down? Well, of course not. Pedro Munhoz, one of the better grapplers in the division. So for Dominic Cruz, it was a good win. It's one of those y'all must have forgot. But just moving forward, I really don't know what you do with Cruz, because I don't think he's going to be able to get back up to that belt anytime soon.
You know, Cruz is a smart fighter. He's kind of doing like a boxing move here in the sense that I don't think Dominic Cruz of today beats the version of Casey Kenney 5 years from now. So he's getting Casey Kenney when he can still beat him. I think that he's a smart enough guy to know those matchups. He certainly studies enough tape. If anybody knows who he should be fighting next, it's Cruz. I think he's going to find the right opponent and in the next couple fights kind of wrap it up. For me, the one interesting part was, and I'm sure he knows this way better than I do, it's that the commentary team said he hadn't lost a step. I think he has. He seemed a little slower, and he seemed like, you know, Kenny could like counter him. And sometimes when he's ducking his head, Kenny was popping him. So I think he's lost a step, maybe a step and a half. So he needs to find the right opponents. All right, up next.
I really don't want to see him fight like Corey Sandhagen next. Like, that's the worst case scenario for Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, no way. All right, Askar Askarov defeated Joseph Benavidez via unanimous decision, a couple 30-27s and a 30-26. What'd you have in this one?
I thought Joseph Benavidez is going to win, and I look like an idiot because of it. Joseph Benavidez just looked old in that fight. He really did. He didn't have much for Askar Askarov, and Askar Askarov ran away with that fight as it went on. I learned a lot more from Askarov than I did from Benavidez in this.
Y'all must have forgot. Who told you about this young guy? I mean, I've been singing his praises since ACB. He looked amazing, and Joe B didn't have an answer for it, and he looked a step slow, so big win for Askarov. I mean, he truly is a top three talent. Should probably get the winner of Moreno Figueiredo unless that ends in a draw. And for Benavidez, I don't see a whole lot left for him.
So I'll throw this out to you, Matt. I'm not the president of the Askar Askarov fan club like your brother. I'm the treasurer. So I don't know as much. But on his feet, I just didn't see the technique there. Do you think – I mean, he's a stud as a grappler, but he just seemed like he was – it wasn't there. I see a tremendous athlete.
Don't sweat the technique.
What do you think? Is his technique on the
level?
His
technique's all right. The issue is Askar Askarov is one of the slower fighters in this division. And I thought Joseph Benavidez would be the fighter to take advantage of that, because you look traditionally, Joseph Benavidez, really good hand speed, goes to the body, goes to the head. But Benavidez did the same thing over and over and over again, and it never had any success. He tried to blitz in with those quick shots to the body, go up top once to the head. But Askar Askarov, yeah, it might have landed once or twice in the first round, but after Askarov figured out what Benavidez was doing, he was meeting him with shots. And I don't think you have to be the fastest guy. You don't have to be the most powerful guy. You need timing. And Askar Askarov does have pretty good timing. He was still able to hit Benavidez, but for Askarov, he's beaten Pantoja, who's a very, very heavy-handed striker, who's a very good grappler as well. And now you've beaten Benavidez. Other than Brandon Moreno, who, of course, is already scheduled to fight for the title, I don't know who else he has left to beat. So I think you're right. I think someone will take advantage of his lack in striking at some point. I did think he lost the fight to Brandon Moreno. But when he fights Figueiredo, the lack of speed is really going to hurt him. I understand he's a good wrestler. He has good volume, too. But someone like Figueiredo can wait, time your mistake and really make you pay for it, unlike Benavidez can. So I agree with Craig. I do think he's next in line for a title shot, but I think Figueiredo is a really tough matchup for Askarov.
You know, if I had a nickel for every time I said they should run the Hearns, Hagler, Duran, who's got missing? Hearns, Hagler, Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard. In a division, I'd have a shitload of nickels. In this one, man, these guys have all fought each other. I just hope they keep having, like, you know, Carl France and Royval and Askarov and Figueiredo and Moreno. All those guys just keep fighting each other, man, because they're all studs and they're all up near the top of the divisions. I hope they keep it going. Speaking of that, Kai Carl France defeated Rogério Bonsorin via TKO in the very first round. What'd you have in this one?
I mean, this fight's the definition of that meme, call the police, but not for me. Kai Carl France is on the receiving end of a 10-8, gets rocked against the cage, has his back taken, and then all of a sudden goes out there and hits a Mark Hunt walk-off KO. Kai Carl France delivers when he fights, and some fighters don't need to win, they don't need to lose. Justin Gaethje is one of those fighters. I don't care what his record is, I just get excited when Justin Gaethje's fighting. Kai Carl France isn't at that level yet, but he's slowly turning into one of those, like, fight of the night favorites, if you will, where even if he is buried on the fight past prelims, I don't care who he's fighting, it's going to be an entertaining scrap. And you bring up the fight against Royval. That was a wild fight. He drops Royval with the first strike he throws, and then he gets dropped himself. You look at the Tyson Nam fight. You look at the Brandon Moreno fights. Like, he's been in there with some really, really top-tier guys, and he's always put on a great show. So I was really happy about that fight. Really impressive performance by Kai Carl France. And we knew he was a heavy-handed striker. We didn't know how much knockout power he had. And this fight really showed that if he hits these guys at 125 clean on the chin, they're going to go down.
You know, Jim Nance did this. Not Jim Nance, Jim Lampley. And the UFC couldn't steal it, but they might want to give him a phone call. Listen, the rankings are already bullshit. So what about this? We got pound for pound, which really, what the hell does that mean? We got all the other rankings. If the UFC really want to take advantage of a guy like Kai Carl France, I'm giving you this to you, UFC. Make a Gotti list. It's all fighters who are like Arturo Gotti. Give it a top 10, change it all the time, and like lean into it. Say, these are our action guys. We got 10 of them that go out there and deliver every time. I think they should really lean into that because they kind of do it anyway, subtly, like, you know, promoting the guys that fight more intensely in that way. Well,
the whole violence weight title there between Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje, like, they had kind of promoted that themselves. So I agree 100%. If they put a list together and it was like Gaethje, Ferguson, Poirier, who else? Robert Whittaker, like, just threw a bunch of names like that. I think that's a great idea.
Absolutely. Let's move on. Tim Elliott defeated Jordan Espinoza via unanimous decision. A couple 30-27s and a 30-25. What'd you have here?
He just thoroughly beat the shit out of Jordan Espinoza. That was what that fight was. And I thought Espinoza had the wrestling defense to at least keep Tim Elliott off of him and expose some of the, I should say, the lack of striking that Tim Elliott has. But Espinoza wasn't able to do that. And with Tim Elliott, he does have that kind of snowball going down a hill effect where if he is able to outgrapple you in that first round, well, he's going to go back to that well again and again and again. And we all know how good the scrambles are at Tim Elliott. So I thought that was just a really good performance by Tim Elliott. He's someone who, I'll be honest, I was pretty down on. He had had some losses, but you look at the losses. Okay, you get submitted by Figueiredo, you lose to Askarov, you lose to Brandon Royval. Well, those guys are all near the top of the division. My only issue is you look at the wins, it's Ryan Benoit, Jordan Espinoza, Mark De La Rosa. There's such a discrepancy between the wins and the losses of Tim Elliott that it really is hard to judge just exactly where he belongs in this division, but it was just a great win for a guy who really needed it.
Kaley Ajeku defeated Carlos Olberg via TKO second round. What'd you have here?
And all the models screamed, I guess. Poor Carlos Olberg. He looked great until he didn't, and he landed that really nice left high kick on Kennedy. I thought the beginning of the end was near, but Carlos Olberg is a good example of you're a good kickboxer, but you're not good at kickboxing in MMA. And there's a really big difference between the two. In kickboxing, you can get away with having your hands down low. You can get away with some, I guess, defensive lapses that you can't in MMA. And for Kennedy and Ajeku, he did the plan. You smother the kickboxer. You have to make this a boxing fight. Get into his range. And we saw Carlos Ulbricht's head movement was awful in this fight. I don't even know if he moved his head. And the finally, the time that he did decide to move his head, he slips out of the way of a punch and then tries to do it again and walks right into a massive right hand. So for Ulbricht, he's a very good striker. I think he proved that in the fight. But we talk about who's going to give him a phone call. He's going to just go back to City Kickboxing and be Adesanya's training partner for a little while. I do think that there's a lot of holes that he showed in his game in that fight. So it was a great win for Kennedy. I thought he finally showed some of the promise that we thought he always did have. But it was a great win for Kennedy and a really, really crushing loss for a guy like Carlos Ulbricht, who it's not like the UFC was promoting him like he was Adesanya, but the UFC 100% had a favorite going into that fight, and their favorite did not win.
Yeah, when Ejekwu kind of went into that shell in the beginning of the fight, you thought, oh, man, this guy's just out of his depth. And then he showed that, listen, I'm somebody that cares about protecting my head here of the two of us, and it made a difference. All right, Sean Brady defeated Jake Matthews by submission via arm triangle. Round three, what you have here?
This was a really weird fight because I thought, well, these guys are both really well-rounded, but Sean Brady, a little bit better at everything. Jake Matthews came out, looked really good on the feet. He was landing in volume. He was landing straight shots. And I did think we saw a good version of Jake Matthews in this fight. He's one of those fighters who you never really know what you're going to get between every fight. But I thought we saw a very good Jake Matthews. And the fact that Sean Brady was able to go out there, stay calm, and really show off his crushing grappling style. He's not a guy who's going to jump from full guard to mount and take a lot of risk. He's very heavy on top, and you saw that. Jake Matthews, the second he was on his back, was not able to get back up to his feet. And Matthews himself is a very good grappler. So I thought it was a great win for Sean Brady. He showed off a good chin. He got hit. He faced adversity. So I thought it was a great win for Sean Brady. And he was supposed to fight, I guess, one half of this weekend's main event in Bilal Muhammad. So you would have to expect Brady to get one of those guys in the top 20, maybe even top 15 next time out.
Amanda Lemos defeated Olivia Hanata Souza via TKO round number two. What'd you have here?
You know those videos where like a lion takes down a gazelle and there's nothing the gazelle can do about it? That was this fight. This fight wasn't competitive at all. Amanda Lemos just walked forward, just battered poor Lavinia Souza. And for Souza, you had to get the fight to the ground, but she didn't. She just kind of walked backwards and ate shots this whole time. I think Amanda Lemos is going places in this division. I really do. She fought at 135. Now she's fighting at 115. You can tell how much bigger and how much stronger she is than a lot of these women in the division. And her style is a very fan-friendly one too. So I'm really high on Lemos moving forward. I think there's a ton of fun fights at women's strawweight because strawweight right now is the deepest women's division. And there's a ton of good fighters in the top 15. I'd love to see her fight maybe Marina Rodriguez. Like, there's a lot of good fights out there for Amanda Lemos moving forward.
Sharpen your knives and put your white coats on. It's time for John to butcher some names. Euros Medic defeated Alon Cruz via TKO in round number one. What you have here?
Euros Medic, the happiest man alive after that win. Disgusting stoppage, first of all. Really gross stoppage. First, like Alon Cruz, I think the official number was 47-0 or 43-0, but Euros Medic destroyed poor Cruz. Hurt him with the first punch he threw, and then it was just an avalanche after that. It was a great win for Medic. I thought he did a good job, too, after his fight. He was just so happy to talk to Joe Rogan, like the happiest person in the world to talk to Joe Rogan. And he set himself aside from just being an unranked lightweight. He's not that anymore. He's now on the list of Joe Rogan's favorites. I think moving forward, he's going to be a guy who Rogan's going to name drop on the broadcast. So I think he did a really good job, not only putting on a great performance, but saying the right things after the fight to ensure he gets another big fight next time out.
That's how you do it. You make it Rogan's list. Just make sure it's all action fighters. And lastly, Trevin Jones defeated Mario Bautista via TKO round number two. What you got here?
Trevin Jones got hands like Canelo. No, I won't go that far, but he did a really good job setting up that knockout shot. He feinted the left hand, hit him with that lead uppercut, kind of shovel hook a la Robbie Lawler. It was just a really nice knockout win. And for Trevin Jones, the last time out, he had a great performance and back on the horse.
And my question, you know, being half a fan in this show, is what about one of the biggest fights of the night? Like, I know Kennedy Ejekwu and Carlos Ulbricht got fight of the night, but we didn't have a chance to really talk about Song Yadong and Kyler Phillips. I mean, that was an amazing fight.
That's right. What are your thoughts on that one, Matt?
That was fight of the night, without a doubt. And I think Kyler Phillips, listen, he's not ranked right now, but he's going to be ranked, and he's going to be a problem for everyone at 135. I had Song Yadong in that fight. Because that's how good Song Yadong is. He's a phenomenal striker. He's got great cardio, great combinations, good hand speed, and good power. Not a lot of guys have all those things going for him. And the fact that Kyler Phillips basically wheel-kicked his way in and out of range and was able to use not only his boxing, but mix in his wrestling too. And that's the crazy thing the broadcast brought up. He started doing jiu-jitsu at the age of 3, and this is how good his striking is. Like, Kyler Phillips is the total package, and I can't wait to see him start to fight more guys in the top 50 moving forward.
Kyler Phillips is a total package and a Phoenix guy. Trains right down the road. All right, let's hit the wrap. We'll start with some housekeeping notes. Matt, performance of the night, Kai Kara France and Rogério Bonsorin. $50,000 to Kara France, fight of the night, like Craig had alluded to. Carlos Olberg and Kenny Ajeku, $50,000 to both. And performance of the night, Uros Medic and Alan Cruz, $50,000 to Medic. All right, let's hit the victory lap. Matt, where were you right?
Not often. I gotta be honest. Where was I right? I mean, I said Amanda Nunes is gonna run over Megan Anderson, and Craig got mad at me because Craig was like, oh, you gotta bring up both sides of it. Now Craig's gonna hold up a trophy that still belongs to me because my record's better, but that's fine. He can keep it for this week. Yeah, Nunes Anderson was not gonna be competitive. I don't think that was much of a hot take. I thought Piotr Jan was well on his way to winning a decision, but sometimes you do very illegal things in the middle of a fight. It wasn't the worst card prediction-wise. I didn't do well, but I was more surprised with individual performances. Like, I thought Rakic was going to win, but I thought he was going to be really impressive in his win. And same thing for Jan. I thought he was going to be able to go out there and finish Sterling at some point in that third, maybe fourth round. So I was more surprised by a lot of guys' performances, but I mean that in the best way possible. Like, I picked Casey Kenny. I'm happy we saw Dominic Cruz look like old Dominic Cruz to a certain degree. I picked Song Yadong, but I think we did get the best version of that fight out of him and Phillips, and I think both those guys kind of proved that they're top 15 worthy. So not much of a victory lap for me this week.
And John, I mean, for Matt, it's kind of like, and you're of the ilk and of the age that you're probably going to get this one, but Matt's kind of doing the old Simply Red on this one, and he's just holding back the years because he doesn't even think about 2019 and 2020 and the fact that he's only up 3, and I'm, as you know, the Funk Master would have said if he won, you know, strategically, I'm coming for that ass. So really, for me, there was a lot of great performances. The Y'all Must Have Forgot out of Askarov. Rakic didn't look as good as either one of us thought he really would, but Amanda Nunes, I don't think anybody can fight her. I mean, other than Henry Cejudo and maybe Volkanovski, I think those are the only 35 and 45ers that could really beat her handily right now.
Well, Craig, if you don't know me by now, you'll never, never, never know me. So we're moving on to who won the night. Matt, who won the night?
It's a tough one as to who won the night. You want to say Jan Blachowicz won the night, and I think he did if I really had to pick somebody. Jan Blachowicz probably won the night. He beat one of the biggest stars in MMA, but the problem is he didn't beat him in a way that's going to give him a lot of shine from it. You talk about the fact that, you know, Nate Diaz was able to beat Conor McGregor, and Conor was able to come back, but the reason that Nate gained so much shine from that was it was the way he was able to finish Conor. It was he took his best shots, he hit the deck, he got up, and then he choked him out. Jan Blachowicz put on a technical display of kickboxing and had a smothering top game. Like, those are really good things for people like the three of us who love MMA. But for a casual fan, I'm guessing you're not like, wow, Jan Blachowicz, I'm really going to buy his pay-per-view next. But I do think he was the winner of the night. And it's nice to see good things happen to good people. And Jan Blachowicz is one of those people. He's not going to be in the media saying crazy stuff. He's not going to be making fun of his opponents in these terrible ways. He's going to laugh. He's going to go for walks to see people in the woods, I guess. And he's just going to be that champion who he might not really stand out, but he's going to represent the sport well. So I do think Jan Blachowicz won the night.
Yeah, I don't completely disagree. I think that the problem with Jan Blachowicz is, like, you can't really call out somebody a weight class below you. You know, not that he did. It was Adesanya was the one that really pushed this thing forward. But if you're going to fight a guy weight class below you, you got to look impressive. You know, it's like if you're going to fight your little brother, you better beat his ass. You can't go to a decision with your little brother. He's your little brother. So my point is that I do think that beating Adesanya and taking a little bit of his shine, if he ends up being the only one that kid ever gets, then yeah, that's going to carry a lot of weight. But yeah, I mean, you give it to Carl France. He looked good. I just don't think it was a big spot. Amanda Nunes wins every night. I mean, realistically, she looks great in every fight. She's the women's GOAT. She's probably the overall GOAT. She continues just rolling along, so you can make a case for her. Craig, what do you got? Who won the night?
I mean, yeah, Amanda Nunes looked amazing. For me, Uros Medic if we're really going to give it a third stab, Uroš Medic. And the thing that Matt said, yeah, it's true after the fact that Joe Rogan was talking about him, but we talked about it when we were just sitting there watching the fight. Joe Rogan knew about him when he was walking in, and he pumped his tires as he was getting into the octagon and as he was fighting. It's like, this Uroš Medic guy, you have to know him. And if Joe Rogan's A, pronouncing a guy who has a difficult name to pronounce in North America, if he's pronouncing the name properly, and B, he's already invested in him, you know that you're already going to get that rub. Then for Uroš to parlay that into, you know, train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, and then he even does the all day, and he kept going. Like, this guy, if he puts on one or two more performances like that, like, Uroš Medic just did the smartest thing. Because before, listen, if he beat Alon Cruz by decision, then really Uroš Medic's fight's probably going to be on a fight night prelim card, a fight night, maybe even a main card if it was halfway good. Uroš Medic is going to be on a pay-per-view next time in North America, in the United States, because Joe Rogan's going to talk about him. Like, this guy's not going to be a fight night guy anymore. So for me, it's Medic, but I'm really looking forward to it as Matt clicks away on a mouse behind that takes away from everything I just said.
All right, listen, we got we stayed in the Apex. The next one's going to be Bilal Muhammad, Leon Edwards. Talk to me a little bit about the fight, either one of you or both of you, and talk to me about the timeline for picks and all that sort of stuff.
We're doing the picks right now. We got through about a quarter of them. We'll do the rest of them either tonight or tomorrow. Listen, this weekend's main event is very interesting because for Bilal Muhammad, we've seen him fight good fighters. We have. He fought Vicente Luque. He's fought Alan Joban, but those were much earlier on in his career. And this new version of Bilal Muhammad that we're seeing is a much more improved version. He's got phenomenal wrestling, phenomenal takedown defense, a never-ending gas tank, and now he's starting to show major improvements in his stand-up. He's got good volume, decent power, and the fact that he's finally starting to bring it all together does make him a very interesting test for Leon Edwards, a guy who I think we all know he is a elite. He can stay with that top five. We just haven't seen him enough against those guys. So I'm really excited for this weekend's main event. And hopefully it's just a great fight between two of the best 170 pounders in the world.
More of the same for me. I mean, I'm really looking forward to this card. And, you know, to let the cat out of the bag a little bit, because it's always the fight of the night screen presented by Manscaped. Promo code FNP, 20% off free shipping. But if you really look into the really good fights that are on this card, it's Canadians that make it exciting. You have a Canadian in the co-main event in Misha Cirkunov. And I know it says Latvia, and even in our graphics, I put Latvia and Canada from Ontario and Toronto. So you have a Canadian there. You have Charles Jourdain taking on Marcelo Rojo in a great fight. That's going to be an all-action fight. People are already messaging us on Instagram about that one fight. But the fight that we haven't heard enough about, but everybody's been saying it, Matt, is the fact that, holy smokes, there's such a good fight between Dan Ige and Gavin Tucker.
There it is.
Dan Ige and Gavin Tucker, what a fight.
War Gavin Tucker. All right, guys, there you have it. One more in the win column, one more for the highlight reel, one more for Fight Night Picks. Peace.